He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and digital diaper enthusiast.
Oh, God. Not for 11 weeks, thank you. Actually, if you mean cleaning up all the shit on all the projects I work on, then yeah, you're probably right. And he is Aubrey Goodman, web services and iOS, and generally all things dev, and professor of punctuality.
Mm.
And this...
That's a lie.
Is, I was going to say composer of computations, but which
that's,
is also
that's better.
True.
But now you can't use that next week.
I can't use that. No, I just I shot my wad twice on this episode. So this is a little thing that we call Distilled. Welcome in here to the podcast. You can find this at Distilled Podcast or distilledradio.com for those of you who just can't stand the thought that this is not on a radio. We agree with you. Mm. You can find it at Distilled Radio on Twitter. And you can find me at JWD2A on Twitter and Aubrey at Aubrey Goodman on Twitter. Is that all the pleasantries?
I think so.
Wonderful.
I think so.
Good, good, good.
So we're joined here today by Tracy Ingram. I don't actually know your title, but maybe you can introduce yourself.
Baron of Badassery.
There we go.
Hi, my name is Tracy Ingram, Baron of Badassery. Newly appointed title. Dave actually was just reading a post yesterday that said you should change your title every once in a while because things like CEO and founder and president and entrepreneur really just are not descriptive enough to describe what you're doing, especially when you're doing something kind of like the XPRIZE.
Right, yeah, exactly. So Baron of Badassery really fits a little bit better there. I love it.
Exactly. So, you know, what we're doing is, for people who don't know what the XPRIZE is, the XPRIZE originally was go to space and back in 2 weeks and be able to reuse that capsule. And so that was a $10 million competition to be able to do that. And this next contest that we're in is to develop, well, basically the Star Trek tricorder. So a usable device that can diagnose 15 diseases and measure vitals.
Wow. That is an ambitious undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, looking at each of these two XPRIZEs, go to space and back in 2 weeks and reuse the vehicle or develop essentially a tricorder, which is the more difficult?
Well, according to XPRIZE themselves, they say rocket science is easy. It's medicine that's hard.
Right.
I wouldn't disagree. As a rocket scientist...
Well,
I'm not a medical doctor, though, so I can't really compare the
two. It is hard to compare. But what they were saying, the sensors needed to see if someone passed the first XPRIZE was a calendar and an altimeter. They basically needed to see, did it happen in 2 weeks, and did they go high enough?
Mm-hmm.
When we get into medicine and starting to understand the minutiae of diagnosis and how accurate it is and, you know, all these different sensors, and are they working and are they safe, are they compliant... And, you know, the biggest thing that I think would be really kind of cool to talk about is, are they usable?
Mm.
Uh-huh.
45% of the competition is on usability.
Is that right? 45%?
Yeah. Only 45% is whether you actually are accurate in diagnosis. 10% on science, but 45% on usability.
This is an interesting statement, right? Because essentially what the XPRIZE jurors are saying is... usability is just as important as the thing actually working to begin with.
Exactly.
Wow.
You know, because we all have thermometers that sit in a drawer that we don't pull out. You know, you take the back of your hand, you put it up against your forehead, and you go, oh, yeah, I got a fever. Mm. You know, and all these times, there's lots of devices that are out there, but they don't work. Or they're, you know, even if they do work, people don't use them.
This is, right. So their thought is, and I think this is exactly correct, if you don't build something useful... and emotionally interesting to people especially, then it doesn't matter if it works because it'll just sit in the drawer and not do anything.
Like your thermometer.
And so not only is functionality important, but getting people to actually use the thing regularly is half of the battle.
Exactly. And that's where you start looking at is how do you bring technology and make technology seamless? Where if it's something that I have to do every day and, you know, the first step of a lot of, you know, tracking is, you know, I'm going to daily log. So I'm going to open up this app and I'm going to fill out my information. Well, that usually lasts about a week.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, the wearable technology, which has been booming right now. I mean, it's a huge industry, but, you know, what is it doing for me on a daily basis?
Right.
And about they say about 55% of wearable devices fall off in about 6 months.
Yeah.
Well, not that they fall off, but people
fall off.
People
lose them.
They lose them. They stop charging them. It sits in the drawer, and they're like, "Oh yeah, is that working, you know?
Right.
And so how do you get someone engaged and, you know, really being able to use something like that? So levels of gamification, levels of interaction, so that you're really engaging someone in something that goes beyond even just health.
Yep.
And that's what we started looking at is like, well, you know, does your health change on a daily basis so much?
Right.
It depends on how much I've drunk the night before.
Right. Yeah, in certain cases, you know, I might be able to pick up some dehydration in you. Right.
Or if you work in a dynamite factory, maybe. Right. But, yeah.
You know, I mean, and so there's definitely
Is that even a thing still?
I don't know.
Dynamite factory?
Well, I mean, I know there's some fireworks factories that have blown up recently.
Yeah, lots of people on the assembly line just stuffing things into big red tubes.
That sounds a little bit like a hospital.
Yeah, you wonder with that, with like, you know, with C4 being popular now, you know, do you do electric cigarettes, you know, are they banned in C4 plants versus, you know?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Regular cigarettes banned in a...
Another topic for another day.
C4 is just unfortunate. They took all the romance out of explosions.
All of
that. Anyway, you were saying.
We digress. But, you know, when you look at it, it's like, how do you create that usability and that user interaction and give someone something on a daily basis?
Yep.
You know, so from that user experience, what we started looking at is now not only measuring vitals and measuring health, but can we start measuring emotion? And so as I see your emotions on a day-to-day, now we can start seeing trends and start seeing activity that is happening on a daily basis. Now, I don't know how scientifically basis this is, but they say about 80% of chronic conditions are caused by stress, various levels of stress.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I've read it a couple places. I don't have sources, but
that
you know.
Fits with the Body Talk Institute really preaches that in Sarasota.
A lot of places really talk about how stress is there. So if 80% of our chronic conditions are caused by stress, you know, being able to track stress seems like a really good place to start when you're really looking at how do you get to the core of health. And then if you look about the 2.6 billion or 2.6 trillion that we spend a year on healthcare, about 75% of that is preventative chronic conditions.
Yep.
Which now is relating back to stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to measure your heart rate and measure, you know, when your heart skips a beat is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good. It's definitely needed. But how do you get to this little thing called health and understand it and give someone something on a daily basis that they can grab onto and go, oh, that's something I can change.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, too. You know, when you talk about measuring stress, and we should talk about how you actually measure stress, I think that's there's probably both chemical and other means of measuring that.
Again, back to looking at my bar tabs.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, there's that stress, but there's good stress too. You know, it's not only just a bad stress.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Too much sex.
Yeah. In that measuring stress and having awareness of stress, you know, the stress in and of itself is one of those things that I don't think people are probably very good at self diagnosing their level of stress.
Oh,
right?
They're very good at like self denying how stressed out they are. No, I'm not stressed. What are you talking about? Why would I know? No,
just stress
had nine cups of coffee. What?
Stress doesn't just affect health internally, but it affects external relationships as well, right? So if you are married and you're stressed out, it causes more friction in a intermarital relationship and otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can see where focusing on that makes a lot of sense, because it doesn't only make you healthier, it makes you and the people around you healthier as well.
Right. So, and I think what you said too about the denial, it's not just a river in Egypt. It's really one of those things that we don't interact with our bodies, and we're so disconnected sometimes. You know, you could say disconnected from our food and everything else like that, but with stress and what's really going on, bringing about an awareness to what are those profound moments in the day. You know, what are the day, you know, when you see your child, you know, for the first time, you know, when you see, you know, when you get home, you know, or when you're stuck in traffic, you know, when you get a little bit of road rage, you know, seeing those experiences and what's stressing you out. Is it when you get to your job, you know, that you're stressed out, or is it when you get home?
Yeah.
You know, and all of those things. Now you
or
start
maybe
having
different stresses even.
Oh, absolutely. And so when you start having those and you start seeing the consistent patterns, and you can start identifying those. And so if you can start measuring stress, so like when we talked about how do you measure it, you can measure it through skin conductance. You can measure it through changes in heart rate. You can measure it through pupil dilation. You can measure it through... There's a few different methods that we're looking at right now. And tying all of that into your GPS on your phone. So now we know where you are.
Where are you? Right.
Phone calls. Maybe it was a phone call that you got that was real
stressful. I was going to say, like, the receipt of a tweet or an instant message or something.
Right. And then if you look at, like, you know, the Samsung phones with eye tracking so that you can see what you're looking at while... So now you can do a correlation to events. And so now what you're looking at is we're already kind of collecting a lot of this data. How do you now correlate that into what's meaningful, important to you to almost automate a daily journal?
Right.
And then what's, and then bringing this all back around, what happens then is the, in the background is your little doctor checking up on your health. And so as slight changes in your temperature, so if you start getting a fever, we can identify that you might be getting sick or your immune system's compromised and interacting with you. So now we've given you something from a usability standpoint on a daily basis.
Yep.
But now turning that into actual medical help to be able to alert you that there's something wrong because you're using it every day.
Interesting. Interesting. I had a question and it just left my head. Think of something.
That'll happen. So I think it's great. I love the idea of having wearable technologies becoming more integrated into our lives, not just in a how many steps did I take today kind of way. Those are good too. And I think the doctors would want to see those as well, because then they get that proof that you've actually been doing the exercise. Eventually, maybe we get to the diet part too. I don't really know. I mean, I know that there are restaurants now that will share with you the, you know, caloric intake values, like all the line item of everything you ordered in like an entree. But there are very few of them. And quite frankly, I tend to think that it's hard to get specific details on that stuff because maybe they put a little more cilantro in it this time or a little less of something else, whatever it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, even the fitness activity trackers, they've said a lot of those are anywhere from 10 to 20% inaccurate.
I was going
to
think maybe closer to 40.
You would think on some of them. Some of them, they did some testing and they said they weren't, you know, I mean, this is under probably some, you know, they're not. Just, you know, a lot of times you'll sit there and just type on the keyboard and you're like, wow, I moved some miles.
Right.
You know, it's like, wait,
right,
that didn't
you're,
really
you're tapping your feet while you're sitting at the desk.
But the other thing is like, where does sensor technology evolve? Where is this, you know, this generation of wearable technology? How does it evolve into something that becomes ubiquitous? How does it become something that is that invisible computer where you have those pieces? And I'm not necessarily talking embeddables, but something that now is able to measure your activity, measure your vital signs without a lot of intervention on your part. You know, having something
so
that's
passively.
Kind of, right. These passive type sensors that are there that, you know, maybe check you when you go to the bathroom, maybe check you when you're going to bed. With Things actually has one that measures your pulse while you're sleeping. And it just has like basically a light that shines on the bed. You know, so there's a lot of those type of sensors that we're looking at that now become, you know, the blurring of the line between Internet of Things and wearable technology is starting to blend.
Because certainly.
And that's where you get where what we're developing commercially is basically software as a service for this wearable technology and these new sensors. So we're building the analytics platform that turns it into data. Turns that data into knowledge.
Information.
Yeah.
Knowledge, yeah.
And so where we see is, you know, when we started looking at it at first, we really wanted to go after some of the, you know, building some of the coolest wearable tech because, you know, we saw it was like, wow, that's a cool idea, you know, and we could do that too. But then meeting with some of the larger companies that are producing some of the newest, latest wearable tech, and, you know, we can't talk about it through non-disclosure agreements, but some of the stuff that's getting ready to come on the market, it's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, there's a lot of good
very
stuff out there.
Usable. So something that people could use on a daily basis. You know, we've had, there's always these challenges with Google Glass and, you know, trying, you know, that's not hit a lot of usability marks.
Right, right. And it only, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly glass, if anything, because of, there's a marginal usefulness and there's a fairly high degree of social
awkwardness,
stigmatism, I guess, or whatever.
Face punching?
Face punching, exactly. I just saw a wearable, I don't know if it's a Kickstarter or if it's out or what it, what they're doing. I think they had a pre-order, actually. And it monitors, I don't know how it does it, uses like spectrometry or something like this to, it monitors caloric intake and nutritional value of what you're eating just by using like a spectrometer across your bloodstream, right? So sits on your wrist and looks at the chemistry of your blood and says, here's how many calories you ingested, right? And here's how many you burn, here's how many, all this kind of thing, which I think is a really interesting, that level of passivity. Mm-hmm. And I think passivity is really important when we talk about getting people to participate. I mean, being usable and making something that people fall in love with and they use because they enjoy the relationship between themselves and the device, themselves and the software, is obviously important. But likewise, I think with wearables and sensor-based technologies, being able to get toward a passive experience, someone just doesn't interact with the thing. Mm-hmm. They don't need to. It's a collector, right? That allows them to interact with another piece of software, whatever, maybe, you know, like what you're building. I think that's a big key to getting higher participation rates over the long run.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you're always going to have your people who are going to be on the forefront that'll try anything.
Right.
But to get mainstream adoption, it needs to be very simple, very culturally accepted, very much not something out of the norm and something that, you know, I already have to grab my wallet, my keys, you know, and, you know, my phone and Orbit wants me to grab my gum while I walk out the door, you know, but all of these things that I have to grab, now I have to grab this wearable and I got to put my watch on, I got to put all this other stuff on, you know. It's interesting that watches have become this preferred form factor when, you know, very few people wear a watch anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering about that.
You know, you ask a, you know, 65-year-old for the
33%
tie.
Of this room. And I also like the only one wearing a wearable as well.
Yeah.
I just like jewelry, okay?
Fucking rock star.
And a great part of wearable technology is becoming fashion.
Yeah.
And that's where you're looking at, well, how does that, how does my fashion change?
Well, that's something I really wanted to talk to, about a little. I've been talking with some prospective clients, other people around in the sort of tech community here. And there's a handful of groups that are working on incorporating wearable technology into this sort of a passive thing in various ways. One of them is working with athletes. So instead of having, you know, a Fitbit or whatever Nike band or up the Jawbone product, whatever it is, instead of wearing something like that on your wrist, which, like you say, is just yet another piece of gear to put on, we're thinking about incorporating that same sort of sensor technology directly into the waistband of your shorts. Mm-hmm. So if you're a sprinter, we would want to be able to take, you know, biometrics from your jersey, your shoes, your, you know, the things you're going to wear anyway. And if we can incorporate the sensor technology in those, then we don't have to, it's that much more passive.
Absolutely. And when you get into the ability to have disposable sensors, I think that's really where that a lot of that's heading. Wearables built into clothing and having just that snap that you can just snap a little piece of wearable right into your clothing, and so that you're just wearing it and I see a lot of industries kind of moving that. Under Armour is actually doing a lot of research with that right now.
I bet they are.
So there is definitely some really cool stuff with that. Wearable shirts that can do full vital monitoring. When we were looking at it for the XPRIZE, we wanted, you know, I kind of wanted to go that direction.
Yep.
The challenge is, well, we have to deliver 30 prototypes to test out on potential clients to do the diagnosis, and I didn't know what form factor or body sizes I would have to provide. And so would now have to provide almost 120 prototypes because I'd have to do a small, medium, and large for each one of them. Not that it's not a great idea. And that's what I find so fascinating about the wearables, is that you're getting all of these different designers really looking at usability, looking at how do you make this something that people could actually use.
Right.
Want to use, you know, and where I'm at is, how do I make the fact that I used it mean something? What do I get out of it?
Right.
Because I've been using it, and okay, now I find, you know, I've been wearing this bracelet and it tells me I sleep 4 hours a night, good sleep, and 3 hours a night I'm tossing and turning.
Right.
What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, right. And to date, there's not been a whole lot of good interpretation of that data, right? I mean, I have a Fitbit, and I wear the Fitbit. I try to wear it a lot. I go through phases of 6 weeks or so that I forget to charge it.
Right.
And then I put it back on before. For a few months, and then I
it falls off.
Charge Absolutely. It for a couple months, right?
Yeah.
That's a whole other...
I have a Fitbit. I have a Jawbone. Yeah. I have, you know, a Fuel Band. I got Zephyr. I got all kinds of...
Yeah, and the Fitbit data is interesting, but it's not all... It sort of just hands you a bunch of numbers, and it goes, here you go. Like, you
Here's
walked...
your numbers.
Yeah, you walked 8,000 steps today. Awesome.
And how do you make that actionable?
Right. Yeah.
And taking it from, wow, this is cool and interesting to actionable. You know?
Yeah, that's
so where
right.
we look at it is, you know, and the sensor technology is not there yet, but if we could tell you how your body reacts to having a Big Mac.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you could see your energy change during the day. You could see, you know, so vegetarians are out there want to prove their lifestyle. They can see how their energy doesn't drop after a meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those type of things that you look at is like, how does what you're doing on a daily basis affect you? And when we look at, you know, it's all the problems that they have with smoking, eating, you know, we can talk about all kinds of things.
Yeah.
There's no immediate reaction.
Feedback. No.
And there's not an immediate feedback loop. So one of the things that I had done is I actually had taken some technology from Russia and taken people down to Costa Rica. And these were cancer survivors. So it was we were doing rehab with them. And what we did is we took baselines of all of the people before we started this week-long course.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took them through changing their diet, changing their activity, changing their exercise, doing massage, doing yoga, doing all this stuff. And then we're able to show them their intestines after this week-long course, really showing them a change in the reactivity of their body.
Wow.
So what, you know, what they were able to do then is like, oh, you mean this works?
They equate the activity with a very tangible and understandable result.
Exactly.
Yep.
And that's what we're looking at is how do you give that actionable, you know, those results-oriented actions? And it's great that you're walking, and it's great that, you know, insurance companies will give you a discount for walking 10,000 steps a day.
Yep.
But what does it mean? And, you know, were you even wearing it, or did you put it on your dog and took it, you know?
That's another one.
And how do you know which time of day you should walk, right? Or whatever the case may be. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I mean, because really when you think about it, you know, we think, you can look at it right now and you can go, man, we've come so far. We know I can track all my calories and I'll know how many calories I should take in every day to lose X many pounds. And that's amazing. And I can type any food in the world into MyFitnessPal and it'll tell me the calories and it's great, right?
Mm.
But at the end of the day, it's still a pretty crude, rudimentary approach.
I could have a whole bunch of calories from, like, you know, some chili cheese fries, or I could have some calories from some vegetables.
Right.
You know,
two completely different things.
But if we're just tracking calories, I could get you there.
Exactly. Right.
What I was just thinking was, like, the run tracker is great. The step counters are great.
Absolutely.
But when we start to have things like the GPS and more information available to make more interesting inferences, we could say, oh, it's not that your heart rate is elevated because you're having some medical event. It's that the last 800 steps you took were like going into the center of the ghetto. So you're getting mugged. That's what's really happening. Right? So, but how does the medical system differentiate between some external event like a car accident where like you just saw someone get in a car accident? You're not involved in it, but your heart rate goes up because of the stress of that.
Well,
you know,
and they've done so much studies on that too, where they did it with basketball players, and they took a group of basketball players that sat and thought about playing the game, and a group of basketball players that actually practiced, and their skill levels retained about the same, so that your mind actually perceives it very similarly, which then can actually have physiological effects on the body.
Exactly.
And you can then, you know. Huh. So when you get when we do another talk on virtual reality and 3D and stuff like that, we could talk all about how endorphins and everything else get released in the body to really make this stuff real. But that's a whole nother topic. But you know, when you get into measuring those sensors, you're absolutely right, and that's what I think is one of the things that's missing is what is the correlation. There was a TED talk that was just recently about this woman's father who used to be like a marathon runner.
Mm.
And I might have some of the details wrong, but she was a marathon runner. He would run, you know, miles every week. And then he got to the point where he was having a hard time running, walking a couple blocks. And he came into the doctor, and then, you know, he's like 78, 77. You know, the doctor's like, well, you know, you're older, you know, walking a couple blocks, that's good. I'm glad you can walk a couple blocks.
Right.
Not realizing the extreme difference that he had.
Right.
Had, you know, heart problems of, you know, a few weeks later and died.
Wow.
But if you would have known his trends, if you would have seen his history,
right, then
his baseline, seeing what the drastic change was.
It would be an obvious indicator that there was something wrong.
But we don't have, our current medical system doesn't, you know, collect time-based data.
Yep.
It collects points in time.
I really wanted to talk about this because there's a lot of things that can happen in especially in the mental health world. I've had personal experience and family experience, friend experience. They all seem to have the same kind of experience with it, which is because they don't have any longer history of how you actually behave in the vast majority of the cases, and they only see you in a crisis situation, they diagnose you with some significant, you know, disorder when they're diagnosing you at the peak of that crisis. So it's not that you're, you know, schizophrenic or bipolar or, you know, in some way unstable. It's that the situation you're going through has the same symptoms as, you know, mania or, you know, I don't know about hallucination is a separate thing, but yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, no, absolutely. They actually, there's a story that says that your used car salesman knows more about you than your doctor.
Yeah.
Because your used car salesman, they have a credit report. They can see what you're wearing, you know, they saw you come in, they knew what you're driving, everything like that. Your doctor, most of the time, you've already been down in a gown. You know, if you're unconscious, you can't tell them anything. If you are conscious, sometimes they don't listen. So, you know, there's this, you know, they don't know, they don't have your history. They don't know who you are. I mean, a lot of that's changing, but...
One of the things I want to follow up with the mental health side of things to get into the sort of the clinical thing is there's one of my biggest pet peeves with all of medical science is that they use the psychiatrist will use this term mental or like chemical imbalance in your brain, but they don't know what the balance is. How can they tell you you're imbalanced if they don't know what the balance is? They just give you mood like stabilizers, which are really just elevators. And like, not, you know, push you out the door for the next patient to do the same thing.
Right, and then check back with you in a month to see how that worked.
How do you think that sort of thing is going to change when we have, you know, more data to?
That's 100% of, you know, where I'm at. My mom was misdiagnosed, you know, with a aneurysm, and it was actually some of the lithium, you know, the mood stabilizers that she was on, that was giving the results that we saw as having, you know, an actual aneurysm and having a problem. And she was bouncing into walls. She crashed a car. She did a whole bunch of things that made us think, okay, she's got an aneurysm. She's got brain problems. It all seemed legit. It wasn't until 2 years later after she had been on bed rest that I was able to finally get, I think, our fourth neurosurgeon, to say that it really was just, you know, a 3 millimeter aneurysm, not a 3 centimeter aneurysm. And that really was the lithium and those mood elevating drugs that she was on that was actually causing her to be on bed rest and causing her not to be able to walk. So, that's you know, it's really trying to find all of those things to be able to go, how did that work today for me? And so, how do you turn that into personalized medicine?
Yeah.
And how did that one pill work for me today? Not how did it work for me in a week?
Yep.
And being able to demodulate that and measure that on a daily basis versus a monthly, yearly basis.
Yeah. I want to make sure before we wrap up here that you have a chance to tell everybody sort of where you're at with the XPRIZE thing and what we can expect and what that's looking at.
Well, we're in the out of 300 teams, we're in the final 21 right now. Awesome. Official teams in the XPRIZE. In August, they're going to, at the IEEE summit, they're going to be announcing the top 10 finalists.
Okay.
Which we are hoping that we're going to be in those top 10. It looks pretty
Fingers
good.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff moving forward that direction. So you can find me online at Tracy Ingram on Twitter or at BioScanR. So it's BioScanR instead of Bioscanner.
Yep.
Bioscanr.com. You could find us there. And the company is Intention Technology.
Okay. Perfect. Excellent. Awesome. Trace, this has been.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great. I love these episodes that go by like it was 15 minutes, and
I know, right?
And I'm like, oh,
I mean, and there's so much stuff that we want to talk about, like in wearables and where mm-hmm. that's going, and yeah. really the invisible. I mean, to me, one of my passions is the invisible computer. If you can make it where
2 weeks ago we podcasted about that
exactly
thing.
What we were talking about. If I have a bike, an electric bike, and it runs when I pedal, the electric motor turns on.
Yep.
When I stop, the electric motor turns off. Yep. I don't do anything different than I do when I ride a bike, but I can ride twice as fast as I normally do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's like this. So to me, it's like that great interface where it's like, I'm just riding a bike.
There is no interface.
Right.
The interface.
Exactly.
Right? There is. Yeah. And that's exactly the point. We're going to do a follow-up episode here very soon
absolutely.
And cover that, because that would be a blast to talk to you about.
I would love
for
to.
Sure.
I'd love to.
Awesome.
Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Appreciate you, Tracy.
Thank you.
And thanks you all for listening.
See you.